Welcome to the SPS Digital Learning Hour, brought to you by the Digital Learning and Assessment Department. We're coming to you today from a conference room in Central Office, bringing you the latest news in Springfield Public Schools in regards to technology, along with inspiring interviews from teachers who are using technology in the classroom. I am your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ed Guy. You can find me out on all the socials at Bearded Tech Ed, or my website, Bearded Tech Ed Guy, or the My SPS We Learn pages. And that's where we're going to start today with our news and announcements. Out on the We Learn page, we have our monthly newsletter. So if you haven't been getting our monthly newsletter, make sure you go out there and check it out. So we do send it out to the tech coordinators to send along to all of you who are out there listening. If you want to get it yourself, you can go out here and view it. We have all the past months posted there. The blog, of course, is posted there. And the latest post is all about OneNote. And then we did previously a series on Sway and how it can be used in the classroom. So I highly encourage you to check all of those out. OneNote is a fantastic notebooking tool. It makes me think back to my days when I was in elementary school and I had that awesome Trapper Keeper with the Velcro that would go whoosh. Every time you open it, you knew you were getting down to business. The OneNote notebook is that same thing except for digital. I actually use it even in my personal life for keeping myself organized. Another thing out on the We Learn page that I do want to point out to you is the 22 tools for 2022. We've been doing this challenge since the beginning of this year, and we've had a number of teachers participate where they have entered in and completed challenges, gotten onto the scoreboard, received badges, and we've even handed out some prize packs for the teachers randomly. If you are interested in partaking, there's a great thing about it, and it's you are already doing a lot of the things that you could get credit for. And honestly, who doesn't like getting badges? Badges you can add to things like the bottom of your email signature. You can also add them into your seeds so that you can have proof of your professional development. So encourage you to check those out. If you are wondering who the previous prize pack winners are, go out to our newsletter. We do post them in there. The next prize pack will be mailed out this week to another lucky teacher. Continuing on with our MySPS news, if you go out to the main page on MySPS, you'll see that the final reminder for authentication needs to be done. That is something that you should have done already. If not, it's super easy. You just put in your cell phone number or a separate email that is not a Springfield one so that you can have account recovery. This is very important. It's a security thing. You need to do it. You're going to have issues if you don't. So if you need directions, please go on out to MySPS for that. There's also some other announcements out there about open enrollments, transfer process, COVID, EAP benefits, you know, all those things. If you're not getting these announcements directly in your email, make sure that you sign up for it on MySPS because there might have been an overlook, but you should also be getting these in your emails. I am so excited to bring you this week's interview of the week. I met with Catherine Runyon over at White Street Elementary. Now, this is a teacher who's been teaching for a long time. I encourage you to listen to the whole interview. We had a lot of great discussion about early uses of technology in the classroom, all the way up to things that she's excited about doing this year. One thing to note on the audio of this interview is that at White Street, the school is a very tall, narrow school with not a lot of extra rooms. And Catherine was kind enough to be doing the interview in a hallway where her office is. And you can hear students coming up and down. We tried to get out as much of that as possible. And there are a couple of weird, awkward pauses in the audio. So that is what's going on, just so that you're aware. So take a listen.
My name is Catherine Runyon. I teach at White Street Elementary. This is my first year in Springfield, but I have been teaching mostly since 1999, I guess 22 years now, and about 17 of them have been teaching technology.
Thinking back for 17 years ago, what were some of the things that you did with your students in the classroom?
Well, back in 2002 was when I started teaching technology. And we were still using floppy disks at that point. So learning how to save and negotiate like the network drives and things like that, that was a big thing. We barely used the internet. And in fact, kids had a permission slip whether we wanted to use the internet. And I'm like, that would not fly for the last 10 years. Kids are still amazed to find out that there was no Google and was no YouTube when I started teaching all of this. It was a lot of Mavis Beacon typing, a lot of things that were on CDs or discs, and that was about it. So, but I still was teaching things like Logo, which has fabulous coding possibilities. I still love Logo and will use it as long as I can.
Now, is Logo the one with the turtle? I'm trying to remember back to when I was doing math in particular with investigations. They had like a disc that you could put in and you could move the turtle.
Yes, Logo is with the turtle. And I loved the investigation software for it. Was one of the better softwares for Logo. I used that even after we stopped using investigations at my previous school. But you can actually get it online in a few different places, Terrapin Logo, Microworlds, and you can even make the scratch figures act kind of like the Logo things. You don't have to type it in. You can just drag the blocks over. Mm-hmm. So
that's awesome. So a lot of those early years, it sounds like, very software based, disk based. And when you're talking floppies, are you talking the 3.5 inch or are you talking the big ones?
Yeah. 3.5 inch. When I was a kid, it was the big ones. Mm-hmm. some of my very early, and actually I even had a computer that used a cassette tape, which nobody knows what that is. No kids know.
I was going to say, I've never even seen a computer that used a cassette tape. Yeah. So.
But you know what a cassette tape is?
Oh, absolutely. I used to record, oh my gosh, it was like the top 40, Casey Kasem's top 40, trying to get songs for a mixtape.
Yeah. Make mixtapes. Yes, absolutely.
So. Oh, I know what cassette tapes are. So okay. I think we even still have some around my house somewhere. So
yes, I still have my favorite mixtapes, which I will never get rid of. I don't necessarily have a player that works for them right now, but
yeah, I was gonna say even cars nowadays don't even have cassettes anymore.
No, my 2004 car was the last one that I think came with a cassette tape.
And yeah, so. I was gonna say I think my 06 Civic had a cassette tape still because I had the VP edition of it, which meant cheap.
Yep.
When did you see the switch really happen with teaching technology away from the software programs into actually being able to create that like you can now?
I think that would probably be around 2010, 11, 12. I did have a period of teaching sixth grade in 2009, 2010. And I remember that I was bringing the laptops into my room more during that time, on a cart, and we were creating more things. It was kind of the beginning of the web 2.0 where there was more interaction, but we started building our own, websites, creating some things, creating videos, sharing things. It wasn't as interactive, but we were putting things out there. For others. So,
yeah. So it started. So in that time, I'm just trying to think because I was teaching at that point too. I just remember
we did a big project for the Haitian earthquake at the time. And so we did some, a service project where we included some technology in making websites and raising money and sending and doing research about it. And so.
Yeah, near the end of my time teaching, so in 2013, 2014, I had just started getting into coding with my fifth grade students. Mm. Were you finding coding also around that same time?
I've actually been coding basically since the beginning. As I said early on with some Logo, using different ones. We actually were making some cool animations with Logo. You can act in micro worlds, you could make the things, the opacity change back and forth. So we would do spooky animations where we'd have ghosts going in and out of buildings and things like that. And so that was all coding. I've been doing Lego robotics since about 2004, I want to say. And that includes some coding for having the robot move around and doing some building and engineering. I took an engineering course at Tufts, engineering for elementary educators at Tufts a couple of years ago, right before the pandemic. And that was a great fun. And I've done a couple of Lego robotics teams that competed in the first Lego leagues. Since the internet really opened up, there's been so many more online coding opportunities. I don't love the Foos, but the Foos are a fun one. Code.org, Brightly. Yeah, so I've just tried to find things. Codable is fantastic for the young ones. And it's a bummer that Scratch Junior is only available on iPads. It'd be lovely if that was an internet-based version. But yeah, having some version of coding, even if it's offline coding, is like, okay, tell me what to do as if I'm a dumb computer. And because computers are dumb, they only do what people tell them to do. And let's see, here's the list of commands that I understand. Let's see if you can make me do what you want, what you want me to do, what you want. Yeah, what you want me to do.
Yeah, I know. I remember in kind of teaching that concept within writing with the previous standards, so the ones before the Common Core standards came in, mm-hmm. an operations type of writing was required. And I remember thinking to myself, and then afterwards seeing like, oh, this is really just like computer science and coding. Mm-hmm. I would have the students, they'd have to write a paper where they would have to explain how to make a root beer float. And so that order of operations that would happen yep. there. And then I brought in $30 worth of ice cream and soda, and I had them stand next to me, and I was the robot following their directions.
Exactly. Yep.
Let's just say the janitor was not my favorite. I was not their favorite person that day because I had a very sticky and wet room and students who were very disappointed that they didn't get a root beer float, but they also learned from that. Of like, oh, it's really important to put the directions and the steps in properly.
Yes.
Or else something is not going to work. If I had known more about computer science at that time, I would have been like, now you got to go back to your paper and debug it.
Yes.
To figure out how to make it work the next time.
Yes. And sometimes debugging is just, oh, if it's a typing program, they have to remember to put a space in or the blocks need to be switched up. I actually just read an interesting thing, and I'm not sure if it's myth or true, but Grace Hopper, the naval coder, computer scientist, she coined the word debugging because there actually like a moth got into one of the computers, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I've read a number of stories about her through different computer science curriculum and training that I've had to go through for the district mm-hmm. for my position to kind of help like suss out like what's good and what's not.
Yeah.
And a lot of them all refer to that story.
Okay.
And I think it's actually even in her book too.
Okay.
So yeah. I'm going to put a true on that. So no Pinocchios or whatever, whatever the New York Times calls it. So. So with technology and teaching it to students, right now you're at White Street, which is a K to five. Mm-hmm. You said that you did have some experience with sixth graders.
Yes.
But thinking in K to five, there's such a wide range of student abilities between grades. So what kind of things do you do to differentiate teaching computer science to, say, kindergartners versus fifth graders?
Well, it's a whole lot of scaffolding at the young age, and actually even at the older age, just because a lot of these kids, even though they've been on computers pretty much for the last 2 years straight with the online schooling, they don't always know how to use it well. And so I try to frame it that using computers is like using a tool. And you can use it well and hit that hammer on the head each time, or you can miss it and hurt your thumb. At the kindergarten level, there's try not to do this as much this year, but a lot of hand-over-hand stuff and repetition, obviously. Using a lot of hand sanitizer, I do the hand-over-hand. like learning how to do double clicks to select things and having things written out. Like if I want them to type something in, like their name, I'll make sure that I have it written out for them already typed up in capital letters so that they can see the same letters on the keyboard as on the keyboard, because they're still figuring out their letters and uppercase versus lowercase. So those are like some very simple basic things. I also give them a lot of analogies that they really understand. So like when we're talking about sequencing of things, we talk about, oh, should I put my shoes on first and then my socks? And then they're like, no. and they're like, okay, so should we do this first or this first when we're putting these blocks in for codable? Or that kind of helps them figure that out. I'm still finding that at like the fourth and fifth grade level, they need a lot of scaffolding for figuring out, okay, they haven't had the logic of the, as much of the logic of the computational thinking. And so so some of them are picking it up very quickly, and others I'm either giving them, example sheets, or, I'm trying to make sure that we talk about it, they see it, they have an example to look at, and then I can say, like, and you can put your own choices into these places. We're building on, they don't have much of a foundation of the computational thinking, and so we're building it block by block. And sometimes dealing with kindergartners versus fifth graders, they also just change your voice a lot. I find I'm talking like this a lot with kindergartners. And then the fifth graders, I gotta remind them.
Do you find it difficult? I was in a meeting last week, and some of the teachers were talking. With the keyboard in particular for the younger students, is it difficult that it's just capital letters? Or like, should we try to find keyboards or keyboard attachments that can be both the upper and the lowercase letters for the keys? Would that make it easier? Or
it is a little, I'm not sure with the keyboard if an upper and lowercase, I don't know if there's any overlays that can be put on. I have been using Typing Club with Jungle Junior for the K&1 to get them at least learning about where the keys are. But yes, some of them, it's still confusing that when they type in the uppercase letter, it comes out lowercase on the whole the password thing for kindergartners is so tricky, because it's just so not developmentally appropriate for them to be putting in a username and password. And even in January, I'm still reminding them, I'm like, okay, hold the shift, tap the letter S. Hold that shift, and then tap the letter S.
Right.
So that's still probably about a third of my kindergartners are working on that.
Yeah.
They'll get it, but they now know the letter S and the letter P.
It's like the first letter they learn. Instead of learning the alphabet with it starting with A, they start with S on the computer. Yeah. Should almost be switched with the A and the S on the keyboard, too.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
What are some things that you're looking forward to teaching this year that you haven't tried yet? I know that from my understanding of how most elementary schools are, you will see all the classrooms, whether it's every once a week or every other week for a few days stretch. Is there anything that you're excited about doing with them?
Well, I'm actually I'm only seeing K1 and 2 on a regular basis. 3, 4, and 5, I'm seeing as a push-in when I'm doing the modules. And I really wish I could see them on a more regular basis, because getting these modules into some of the classes has been tricky, because the pacing is pretty full already. Their schedules are pretty full, and so I've been sneaking in like recess groups in some grades, and then half an hour here, half an hour there, which is very tricky when trying to like set up the hummingbird projects and things like that. What am I looking forward to? Well, I want to see what the next modules are. I've been having a great time with my second grades a lot because I see them for a whole week at a time. We're about to make our interactive posters with the Makey Makeys and Scratch. I have been doing Scratch with like second, third, fourth, fifth in some way or another just because it's a lot of fun to. It's a great program, and it's you can take it either at a very small level or it can be expanded to a bunch of huge to big projects. So, yeah, I'm wanting to try using the microbits more because these are the microbits and Hummingbird are things that I had not played with much. I played a little bit with the microbits, but it wasn't part of my my previous experience. So. Mm-hmm. So I wish I had longer stretches of time with some of the kids, but I can bring that into some of the classes that I am seeing more regularly, the K-1 and 2. So
that's awesome. I know the Makey Makeys are a lot of fun.
Yeah, so. those are boatloads of fun. So yeah.
So that'll be a big hit.
Yeah.
So I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I know that's you're still in the middle of your school day here. So I want to wrap up by asking what I think is probably the most important question,
okay.
Which is after reading the digital learning playbook, I've really come to appreciate teacher self-care as one of the things I never did really well when I was teaching. I still don't do it very well, even though I'm not teaching, but I've got my job now that I do, but I'm working on it. So what are some things that you're doing to take care of yourself?
Well, I'm making sure that I do fun things with my own child now and then because I've got a second grader at home. That's him behind me. And then this year I have been getting into doing nail polish, so which I had never done before. So I've been finding fun colors and trying to change that up on a regular basis while I put my feet up and watch some Netflix or... and take a break. So my child is into like every sport possible. And so a lot of my extra time goes to following him around to hockey games and, now taekwondo and in better weather soccer.
So do you have a favorite color for your nails that you've done so far that back to?
Well, at a salon once I got some nails that were kind of chrome colored. It was kind of like it was purple and it was like a purple and green mix. And so you can see that I had purple, but whenever my tips start chipping off, I then like kind of fill it in with some other color. So this was just a design that I did. But
nice.
Yeah, I like it when it looks shimmery in different ways. So.
Yeah, you and my daughter. My daughter loves anything shiny. So
yeah.
I don't know where she gets it because my wife and I are both like blacks and browns and grays.
Well, most of my clothes is that way, and so I figure my nails are mostly on the darker or like more muted darker colors, but just gotta have a little bit of shimmer in them. So but yeah. ADOS, attention deficit, oh, shiny. So.
Shiny. Well, thank you for your time. It's been a great time to chat, and I can't wait to hear more about what the future holds.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's been a good time, and enjoy your afternoon.
You too. I'm off to another meeting. So.
Okay. Whee! All right.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you again, Catherine, for taking time out of your day to talk to us about being a technology teacher here inside of Springfield Public Schools and what it's like at your school. A lot of great things that you've been doing, and it was really cool to hear how use of technology back when I was still a student or I was in college, what it was like to be a classroom teacher using technology in the classroom. I hope all of you were able to get a lot out of that interview and learn a lot. If you enjoyed this interview and you would like to spread the word, we would love for you to do that. If you go out to wherever you're listening to this podcast, leave us a rating and a review. Of course, make sure you're subscribed so when the new episodes appear, you get them first. We also would love it if you could share this podcast out. That's one of the ways that Apple and Spotify will promote the podcast. So I can't wait to share next episode's interview with you. I think you'll also really enjoy it and get a lot out of it. I'm your host, Mike Thomas, the Bearded Tech Ad Guy, and this is the SPS Digital Learning Hour. The Digital Learning Hour is written, directed, produced, edited by Mike Thomas from Springfield Public Schools in the OITA department. The music you are hearing is from an artist called Risen. Check out their stuff on SoundCloud, YouTube, other places where you like to listen to music. Their information is also located in our show notes below.